you can go to this company and say, look, I have a, you know, here's my receivables. I'm going to generate this much money. So advance me on first month fee. Yeah. But the other side of this is that these games are profitable within like 3 days. So you can also do that on the marketing spend. So you can basically fund yourself on both ends without really needing heavy amounts of cash like you would need in the game space for more beer.
Yeah, I'm just still curious at the scale, like how much scale
at some point, like you need some kind of a buffer to kind of keep you running.
This is no bullshit gaming podcast, 2.5 gamers. Sharing actionable insights, dropping knowledge from our day-to-day user acquisition, game design, and ad monetization jobs. We are definitely not discussing the latest industry news, but having so much fun. Let's not forget this is a 4 a.m. conference discussion vibe, so let's not take it too seriously.
Do the intro. Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Matija Vančević.
I'm Felix Grauber.
And I'm Jakub Lepjar.
We are your hosts for today, and we have Gus and we have Adam over here. Okay, so let's start with the actual intro. Obviously, this is a live podcast, again, from the conference. Yeah. It's live.
It's very live.
We're very live. We have Schweppes over here. It's fine. Let's start with Gus' intro, and then Adam, you will do the intro, and then we'll see what happens.
As usual.
As usual. Yeah. Cool.
Sure.
Hey.
Who the fuck are you?
Hello. I'm Gus.
Yes. We know each other for a while.
Yeah.
True.
We work together, actually.
I know, yeah.
That's awesome. UA, admon, mostly UA. Nowadays, very AI and shit. I've been doing mobile game marketing for like 10 years in various different genres. We kind of did mid-core together.
That's true, yeah. Almost 4X as
no
well.
Hardcore,
right? Almost, yeah, yeah.
Almost hardcore, yeah.
I've actually been in a hyper-casual studio.
Yeah. So we also did casual together.
Yeah, we did casual together. No, hybrid.
Hybrid. Yeah, nowadays hybrid, so
shit. Yeah, I have worked with two out of three of you.
We're still talking about gaming, right?
Two and a half of you.
Perfect. And we're still talking about gaming.
So, summary, if you see that I have like 50 game launches, it's because 35 of them were hyper-casual.
Okay.
That's the context.
Nice.
Yeah, that's about me.
How about you?
My name's Adam Jaffe. I'm working in gaming for a while. Got my own studio here in Barcelona for the last 3 years called Mega Studio. We do first and third-party game development. We're sort of focused at the moment in the kind of rewarded gaming space and gamification. Ooh. But yeah, man, I'm sort of OG in this space. Been working in gaming for companies like Playtikas, Jam City, Social Point, you name it, I probably have done something with them. And yeah, also kind of a conference whore, and I'm here just hanging out.
We all are.
I don't do work here. And people are like, oh, what did you use?
What's your goal?
Is this a good conference for you? And I'm like, well, I'm here. I was invited, so obviously people should be happy that I'm here.
People should be happy.
I'm literally here because people invited me to be here to
have a professional conference goer.
Exactly. That is what I need to have in this. Not speaker, I guess if you have the word speaker, you're technically a professional conference goer, but I think we should be more explicit about that. You're here for people too.
Meet.
Yeah.
They meet you.
Did you see
you go to some of the talks and it's like,
No.
Like, why not? Because I was outside. People want to talk to me.
Yeah, I was like, that's always the case. Like, what's your goal at this conference? Like, I don't have a goal. What do you mean? How can you justify me? It's like, first of all, I'm my own boss, so I can justify whatever the fuck I want. I want to just meet people. That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Long are the days of having to, like, justify.
What kind of games are you guys doing?
So we make a kind of game. First of all, we've made a bunch of different types, but the games that you're referring to from your... So we do a kind of game which is a variation of rewarded games. So rewarded games are, you know, you see these types of products where you can sell.
You are about
money.
To witness a very special moment.
Wow.
So you go. It's a very special moment.
I have a moment of size.
Yeah, I have a moment of size. Oh my god, this is fucking
what everyone is here for.
Can I get it for the start?
Because you go here, John and Josh are the guys.
They did the work.
It worked.
Thank you very much.
Cheers to you guys.
Is this for you?
I'll take one.
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Cheers.
Cheers to you.
The choice of life.
Yes.
Cheers.
Yeah,
for those listening, guys, I'm just cheering with margaritas.
Anyway, rewarded games. So, rewarded games, interesting topic. Basically, what we do is players come in and we incentivize them to play our game by offering them real money payouts. right? But there's no in-app purchase. So the user, so there's no cash transaction there, which is why we can kind of go outside of the world of gambling. So we're not part of RNG, we're not skill-based, none of that stuff, like proper.
How do you get them out of mobile then?
How do you get them out of the mobile?
Like, why do they pay if the entry file is in mobile?
No, they don't pay. They don't pay. So we basically...
Great monetization. They
think
don't pay.
Think about your offer walls or think about, you know, any game that has ads in there, right? Yeah. So essentially, that's what we're doing. We're offering the user some type of value for actually going on to take this product.
Wait a second. Time out. I install your game.
Yeah.
It's from mobile store.
Yes.
App Store, Google Play.
Yes.
Where's the money part? How do I get to it?
You don't get to the money. How do you...
You get to the money.
How do you know? Sorry. How do you make money as a player? Sorry. Yeah. So basically, you come into the game. You're playing the game, you're scratching cards, you're with the slot machine, all of a sudden you get a winning card or winning, you know, whatever amount of money. And we say, hey, if you want to claim this, you must go perform some actions. So it's basically, it's a kind of incentivized product.
You must go where?
Go to an offer wall, watch an ad, complete a survey, give us information, PII, whatever it is. So we're building up this sort of infrastructure around sending players out and
so you give him a quest for ads.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they do that. So it's the gamification of ad monetization, the gamification of, you know, first-party data collection.
Okay, so I watched 20 rewarded ads, whatever, Felix's whole portfolio.
Yeah.
I just did that. So where's the money, or how do they get the money? What's the next step?
So then you've accumulated some amount of value. We take that value, and then we deliver it to you in the form of that card we allow you to reveal it. And then you say, hey, you've got 25 cents available. If you'd like to, you can go cash it out.
Where?
Go to PayPal.
To PayPal?
PayPal or whatever.
And how do they direct the user to that link? You know, like,
no, it's
I'm
there.
Talking,
it's,
you know where I'm heading
it's
here.
In. So PayPal, there's PayPal, there's a bunch of companies that do rewarded payouts for, you know, big companies. All of the guys that, and they're in the rewarded space, you know, if you look at like your ad shows or your Fluence or whatever, so they all have a payout option.
That's the technical infrastructure behind it. Like, I'm still at the point, like, how do you translate the user
through where I'm heading.
Yeah, so basically, it's like any payout. It's within the app, so it feels like a native solution. So you come into the game, you're saying, I have about $5 to cash out. You click the cash out button, and say, put in your PayPal account. They submit the claim, or they submit the payout.
We approve. And it's like reverse, like in Apple Pay or whatever, like stores, you would, like, put your account.
Yeah.
This time they put their account.
Yeah.
So they never leave the app.
Never.
I thought that at some point they were like browsing link or whatever.
No.
There is a method to the madness, not
there.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. So what we see is interesting. You know, if you think about ATT came, what was that, like 3 years ago? Fucked everybody up with iOS. Now we have privacy sandbox that are gonna, like, you know, and CPMs are declining. Now you even have other things like, you know,
the move to bidders and, you know,
you just need to find a workaround, that's it.
But this is the workaround. Why? Because when you come to me and you're saying, like, I want to get paid out, I say yes. I say, okay, accept the tracking parameters. Give me email address. Give me phone number. Give me all this information. They're like, of course.
Yeah.
So we get to kind of, so then what would we have? We have a very rich traffic set that we can then, you know, so your CPMs are typically higher because we know who you are. We have better CPIs. We know, you know, we can actually do behavioral targeting within our own user base. So it's an interesting play.
So you completely circumvent any kind of, you know, the usual store fees, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there are, because there is no...
Think about
it like this. I'm giving you money to play my game.
Yeah.
But
actually, you're giving money to play Felix Ed's Quest.
Yeah, because the thing is that up until this point, right, you know, when we think, I mean, think about the idea of a device graph, right? Like, I know you have played in all these products and you're worth all this money. You don't know that. I do. In fact, actually, as a game developer, I don't. Felix knows it because he's got the ad
mindset.
He's the one who's got the CPM understanding, right?
Yeah.
So all I'm doing is saying, you're a heavy spender on games. You should benefit from that. Yeah. Beyond the fact that you get an offer that is now, rather than getting $5, you're getting a $100 offer because you're a big spender. I'm actually telling you, you're worth a lot of money to me. So when you go and you watch his ad and it's a $600 CPM and you just earn me $3 for that view, take $2 of that. Yeah. And now you've got a little cash. So you keep that process going.
That's right.
Does it work at scale?
Yes.
Yeah, that's my question.
Yes.
What kind of scale are we talking about?
I mean, if you think about the rewarded space,
no bullshit scale.
Right now they're currently generating about $1.5 billion in spend annually between the companies. So we're not at the same scale as your gaming. You know, that's about $26 billion, I think. This category is growing year over year. But what's interesting is that because I'm the one taking the risk, I'm the one paying out. Mm. So typical, think of incentive traffic, right? From like Taptoy from 10 years ago, right?
The good old days.
Yeah, the good old days of like Boost and whatever. So when you come in, you say, I'm an advertiser. Let's buy some incentive traffic. I start going, well, it's only on that install typically, or maybe some post install event. but the whole responsibility is placed on the advertiser to basically convert that user. Mm-hmm. Now the publisher's stepping in and saying, no, actually, I'm rewarding that player for playing your game, but I'm rewarding with part of the CPA I generate from you. So I actually have an incentive to make sure that A, it's not fraud, because if I'm paying fraud, you're gonna drop me.
Yeah.
Right.
You mentioned fraud.
So I was like,
fraud.
No, so that's funny. You talk about play to earn, right? But at the end of the day, that's what, you know, people would talk about that. Like, we've been doing these games for a few years now. They would come up and say, oh, what do you do? Like, I'm in the play to earn space. Be like, you're describing what I'm describing. Well, not exactly. You can play and sometimes earn. What you can actually earn. So it's,
how do you arbitrage between payouts and the payout schedules that you get from ad networks, which is net 30, net 60, right? And you have to give it instantly to users, and that
makes you
open for like fraud and fraud.
Yeah. So
bots.
I worked in casino for a long time when I was living in Israel, and so yeah, fraud is a big part of it. You know, so you have anti-fraud measures, but what's nice about fraud is that it usually looks like fraud. I mean, you work in, you know what marketing is like, it's too good to be true, it's always too good to be true.
Yeah.
Right. It's always fraud. So if you're like, oh, all of a sudden, one guy tried to cash out a ton of money, not to mention, by the way, the cash outs are automatic, right? Yeah. So we still have to review, we look at
How long for cashing out?
It was in 24 hours. It can be faster. You know, generally speaking,
but you have someone manually reviewing each of them.
It can get to that point, but eventually, if you get to a place where you have, for example, we do a face verification, you have to upload an ID. Once that's done, then the cash-outs can be
real money involved.
But how do you manage that arbitrage, right? Because you get paid net 30, net 60,
and some cash in the bank.
Okay.
But it's also what's nice is that that's because these businesses you have a guaranteed payout for the most part.
Yeah.
You can go to a Bravo, you can go to some of these, because they just sold, you go to these companies and say, look, I have here's my receivables, I'm gonna generate this much money, so advance me on first month fee.
Yeah.
But the other side of this is that these games are profitable within like 3 days. So you could also do that on the marketing spend. So you can basically fund yourself on both ends without really needing heavy amounts of cash like you would need in the game space for more there.
Yeah, I'm just still curious at the scale, like how much scale
at some point, like you need some kind of a buffer to kind of keep you running. Like, how big the buffer
talking 3 days, then
it's in 3 days. Yeah.
So the thing is that the standard arbitrage method works here. Why? Because, think about it a different way. Let's look at like a Liftoff or AppLovin. It's essentially the same process, except that rather than have, buy your ads of other games, it's just sitting in one product, which we are then using to basically shift users into other products. It's kind of like a super affiliate concept, if you will, but we have a better way of targeting and cheaper to acquire users.
Cheaper to acquire.
Yeah, because when you put in the, for example, we did a deal with a casino and for some real money gaming.
Real world casino?
Yeah, real casino.
But cheaper and casino in the same sentence.
already smelling weird.
What's interesting is that I tell you as a user, I say, hey, listen, I want to earn some money by playing games. They're like, absolutely. So then they So that automatically drops CPA or CPI down 20-30% or even more. But that's not 30% on a typical casino user. That's on like that type of user, which is already, our average CPI was like in the US.
Yeah.
With that, it comes down even to 60 cents. So it's like hyper casual territory when it comes to CPI. But what's interesting is you can take those
users. Your creatives.
Oh, the creatives are bats.
That shit's crazy.
back to product wise.
No. Save this thought.
The creatives are the creatives are awful. It's basically just like one person.
Money,
get money, do this thing.
Yes, we're recording a podcast.
We're in the middle of recording it.
That's 1 year out.
No, we really are recording.
We really are recording.
Definitely that.
Fucking app love.
Yeah,
fucking
app love. We're trying to get into everything, man. We didn't accept the.
No, we don't want your SDK.
Come on. I love you, Adam.
Yeah.
And Raph too.
Totally not sponsored.
Yeah, that's what what were we talking about? Creatives.
Terrible creatives.
Yeah, the creatives are really busy. It's like, so what these companies are doing is, you
get
guys
rich
remember,
quick.
Yeah, but you remember that it was like maybe 2-3 years ago?
Billionaire.
Get rich quick, yeah.
No, that's what's interesting. If I tell you you're going to win $1,000, you won't click.
But
it's too crazy.
Yeah, but you can earn $5 per minute. Everybody's like, oh, yes.
Yeah. I say, you can earn $2-3 a minute, or you can earn $5 like instantly. Like, people are like, oh, I want to earn $5 right now. Like,
yeah.
And generally speaking, the people who are playing the games, you know, they're not wealthy. You know, for them, $2-3, $10, like, it's meaningful. It's material value for them. And then the ads themselves
are just garbage. Just in general, they're the worst. It's like,
I worked on real money gaming apps before.
Now, that's different. Real money is different. These ads, because they're completely unregulated,
fake money gaming.
It's the worst.
But it's like the creative kind of concepts are very similar to what I've done before the game.
Yeah.
Earn five bucks in a minute, or
it works.
Yeah, $10 now, immediately.
So like, it's like literally like the real play to earn in a way.
Yeah.
But as I said, like, it's supported by like a social casino genre. Casino genre, let's say.
But it can be anything. I mean, we built a fruit slicer product. We built like a flick golf game. I mean, you can go skill based, and
it's happening on all those images.
Anything. I mean, as long as the thing is, people are coming to make money. So as long as the game isn't standing in their way, you can gamify process by saying like, here's the thing you need to do. But there are products that have been typical in the space where the rewarded product is so convoluted that you're like, your payout is. And then you have to buy this ticket that gets you a raffle that gets you something at the end of the week, and people are like, fuck that, you know, like, it's too far in the future, I want some money now, and then they're like, you don't get it, and of course we're listening, it's not real, it's fake, and then you're done. Exactly.
What is the info that you're running here on these users, like how many ads are they watching on average?
Many.
Is it 10
many
to 15?
All of them.
All of them. Give me your inventory.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, on a daily basis?
Yeah, like a rewarded ad info. Like,
okay.
What's ad viewer rate, roughly? Like, and what's info, you're allowed to say?
The two metrics that we always talk about.
I don't know the impressions per DAU, but I can tell you, I mean, it's probably, it depends on the product. Like, we've had products where...
For this to work, it needs to be more than 10 at least.
Yeah, so I would say that's baseline for us, 10 to 15.
Yeah.
But then we had a product that basically... every 24 hours we would run a tournament, so you'd be paying out like $200 tournament, and then the way we're supporting the tournament is now it's a one-to-many approach. So maybe you're gonna only earn $1 individually, but now you can earn $50, you know, like instantly, not instantly, every day. The way it works is that every 2 minutes you can watch an ad that can give you a multiplier of the coins that you earn in the scratch card.
Jeez.
That multiplier, right? It compounds over the 24
hour. Yeah.
It compounds over a 24 hour period. Right, so every 2-3 minutes you watch, you get a 2%. So by the end of the day, those cars are worth millions and millions of coins just because of the compounding value you've created. And that's not really. Wait,
it's fine.
Wait.
Guys, can you just.
We're recording.
Thank you.
The joys of life.
It's a conference cast.
It's
different. Yeah. It'll be a little more than that's where I want to sit.
We need the casting cards next time.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I'm kind of
need to dig more into this.
What's the catch?
Yeah, like
what's the catch?
Why is not everyone?
Because
doing
it? Because they're not games.
There's a lot of new ones this year. I can imagine not exactly the same process, but a lot of incentivized networks.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely a lot of incentive shopping. It doesn't work very well.
We have these conversations.
A lot of people got to the same conclusion, roughly. Some of them with different tech that's better or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, Adam just said, like, it just screams to me, like, only certain types of genres can create
economies that can, you know, sustain these
things. Man, I've seen this tile match games with the real money gaming layer, pool games, all like something
skill-based.
Skill-based. Yeah. It's like, it's absolute random. I'm like, tile match game with this? What the fuck? Seriously.
Money printer.
The thing is that a lot of times these games are being built by people that either are really into gaming, in which case they build games, which is not the purpose of these types of products, or they're on the other side. Shocker. Or they're coming from the media side, and so they don't understand the gaming side, and so they fail on sort of the basic gamified elements. And I think that's what we have sort of carved a little niche for ourselves. Like, we come from gaming, but we also come from casino as well. So I recognize that the marketing element is, for example, I'll give you something that most people don't think about. This is a tidbit for the kids at home.
We can all support advertising to Q60 in any way.
This is to amaze your friends and confuse your enemies. So the idea here is that in a typical company, like any type of offer wall from your game, when you send a user out, if your game is too good, they'll just go get the credit and come back, right? Which actually for me is bad, even though it's my game, because the advertisers who are buying this traffic.
The game needs to suck.
No, this is an important caveat, because if it doesn't, if it's a great game and I'm just like, so I jump into it and I do the incent offer for whatever, for Moon Active, you know, as a, as you know, from the company's perspective, that's great. I just earn $10, $15. But Moon Active will kill my campaign after a couple of days. Why? Because there's no longevity with those users.
Okay. Yeah.
So I can't make the game so interesting, or more specifically, I need them to play Moon Active more consistently. Why? Because then otherwise Moon Active kills.
Yeah, yeah.
You worked at Moon Active once.
I'm part of the advisor board team for the last
11 years. But that's very interesting. Really. I don't think so. I've heard
he said interesting like 5 times already, so I guess...
it's interesting.
That is interesting.
You know, I think this... And I want to hear from Gus because I'm taking up too much of the time.
Oh,
but...
I'm not selling anything.
No, because, you know, I think the problem we have with the gaming industry, and I think there's a whole host of reasons why this is. I think today it's because, you know, VCs have become... smarter, right? They look at KPIs, what's your ARPDAU, what's your ROAS, so they pigeonhole gaming into the space.
They become more paranoid or more like skeptical of things.
Scared.
Yeah,
scared.
They wiser in a way, but effectively right now, what I feel like it's, if you don't have KPIs, we're not even in a conversation.
Yeah.
And that's also short-sighted to another extent. So smart.
We had few investors on our podcast already, and after some of the discussions we felt like, okay, well, you know what you're doing, you don't.
But even the ones who don't, they like it, the point is that the gaming space, you know, 6 years ago, it was, you know, I have an idea and I think it could be like this, and there wasn't enough people that could tell you that it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
That they would say, okay, like, let's test it, take a million, take half a million.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Right? And so, but what's also coming down is that the platforms are no longer providing any level of support. So it used to be you get a feature from Apple.
Oh, that was game changing,
life changing amounts of money and insults.
Yes.
Google
now
feature
it crushes your ECPM because users are shit.
Yeah, but still, making the days you can earn shit ton of money in a week.
Yeah.
Now it's like not happening.
No, it doesn't happen. And maybe, and more than that, you used to build your whole business around a feature. You know,
like,
I have a game. You contact your Apple rep or your
even
Google. Yeah, your updates. Like, and there were positions in companies that was the only person's job. So if you take this whole kind of ecosystem now, where you get no support from networks
from the platform.
Yeah, platform doesn't support you. The market is expensive. It's only getting more expensive, and there's no money to do it. Companies need to find ways to survive. And I feel like this is why these products are coming back.
It's called paid UA.
You know something about that.
No,
business.
Yeah, maybe.
But I've been talking about this actually today, which is like, it's no longer the product is king, product is still king, but...
Thank you.
It is. But I feel like the marketing team also needs like a unique selling point. It's like not just a product anymore. And that was the difference between, let's say, a few years ago and now.
Guys, honestly, I will take you one step further. Marketing determines the product these days.
Yes.
Product. Like in the game, it's like marketing. The funnel onboarding, it's marketing determines.
And the best game designers know it. And the best game designers are paying attention to what marketing is seeing.
Like you were talking on the lecture, like literally, like we've seen this many times. The like biggest example that we always talk about is Whiteout Survival. They literally build the game just for onboarding. And there's a second game, which is the moneymaker.
Yeah.
So that's like where the eye is in there, the muscle.
Yeah.
It's true, and I think marketing always sort of felt like that, you know, like, hey, we need to be able to have these features and this functionality, but
nobody was listening.
And even today, I would say
they need to. I think that's the difference. Now
today
they need
to. The market will push it to it.
Yeah.
It's a requirement.
It's like they don't need to, but then suddenly, nothing is working.
Investor money right now.
Here's the interesting thing, guys, is that, and I've worked on tons and tons of games with different companies. Part of what I do is actually come into businesses to help them in this very specific moment, which is the moment between when the users pass from the marketing user, being a marketing user, to a
product.
Because you know what? No company, and I mean no company, really is there in that moment. There isn't a position that exists for the most part. Some people call it product marketing. Some people call it like CRO. Some people, like, they have, there are titles, but it's really that you need somebody who knows how to run marketing campaigns and knows how these users are coming in. Oh, this is a tech user, this is Facebook, this is a TikTok, whatever. and you need somebody who knows how to do game design. Like,
it's just almost as if you need 2.5 people as one.
Thanks, guys.
That was a podcast. But honestly, as someone who was a game designer turned marketeer, I can tell you, like, it's super rare that someone speaks both languages. And it's necessary.
And even more so, because what happens...
We don't speak Remo.
They still don't speak Remo. I can speak both languages, but they don't.
No, but think about it another way, guys. It's not the marketing guy's fault, because between 2016...
Hey, no, there you go.
No, but from 2014, when behavioral targeting became the way you bought media, right? What did Facebook do? They said, listen, don't fuck around with targeting or whatever. Lookalikes worldwide for buyers.
Yeah.
And we'll handle it. You work it on creator and we'll do everything else. So what did media buyers become? Become data scientists.
Absolutely.
They became lazy fucks.
You remember that?
I think that's a good tagline. Yeah. Marketing manager, aka a lazy fuck.
Lazy fuck, yeah. That's going to be on the next t-shirt.
I don't fuck lazily, but I am a. Anyway. No, but the point is that the market basically built a media buyer who had no sense of his own game, because you could always find the right user for that type of product. And so they never had to think about marketing or how the users they were bringing, how is this non-gaming, non-whatever user going to convert my product? How do we, marketing needs.
It was like the 2013, 14, 15, maybe just before the like ML kind of era started.
The end of machines of glory days.
I remember those days. We had hundreds of campaigns, like very niche targeted.
Yeah, of course.
18 to 24, interest, lookalikes, everything. And I was like, oh, let's just create one Advantage Plus campaign for fucking everybody. Well, let's put slap like big budgets. I was like, oh, let's Facebook do the trick.
And then you have guys like come and say, okay, if you guys want to run a campaign with us, you need to spend $500-$600 a day per OS per market for 2 weeks. And don't look at the campaigns because your CPAs are going to be like $300-$400.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But don't worry, it'll come down. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't have like 50K just lying around in Germany.
Exactly. No, you know, we don't look at the campaigns like in 2 weeks.
It's called a learning phase.
Yeah, it's called,
The only one who's learning is how I can spend what I could have done with that $300,000 I just. But I think that is what's taking place in the gaming space. We went from a very art style kind of, creative business to a very. And then we did this massive shift. You know, hyper casual to this like technology driven, you know, like we don't care what the game looks like, if it's getting 60 day attention, 60% we're there. And now people are in this position where it's like, okay, if I'm on iOS, I gotta be like creative again, but on Android I can still do the thing.
Yeah, but those guys don't have that muscles from like the 2013-14. It's like oh well I'm
I think this is like two players at the same time. So it's like simultaneously the gamers that are suddenly opening their eyes to the business, and then you have the hyper casuals that are suddenly opening up to more refined game making, you know. So it's a bit like John was saying in the other day, like hyper casual, I'm moving to hybrid casual and eventually casual. But you also have the reverse movement of like mid-core doing fake ads that are hyper casual. Like,
fake gameplay.
Well, because they can't buy the users anymore.
Of course, because it's super expensive.
Yeah, because they can't go that
way. It is the singularity.
Right, so marketing volume.
You all meet in the middle.
Yes. Halfway, with two men.
In the between.
No, I think it's a look. I've been in this space almost almost 20 years now, and I think
you look like young. So. Good.
I sort of went off.
That's what real money does to you.
Exactly.
Okay.
But,
fair enough.
No, but I think that's the what we're seeing today is an industry that doesn't really know itself.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are trying to
come to find the new thing.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the new thing. They just don't know their own thing.
You guys as consultants, you guys see this, that you have to reteach the basics over and over and over again. Because it's like they are in this industry, but they don't know what the industry actually implies, like over and over. And it, as someone that, like, after a decade of doing this, it's like, guys, we've been over this.
Yes, I know. I've seen this. Like, hey, guys, come on.
Like, here's a podcast I did in 1995. Just watch this. I know it's in black and white, but you'll survive. No, because some of these kids that are coming in now, like these UA managers,
they don't have no clue.
But they have no context.
They grew up in a world that they just needed to be economists. It's like money in, money out. Yeah, there's no marketing anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah, low interest rates, well. Now we're like normal interest rates.
Yeah, it's like, hey, welcome to the real world.
Like, what are we going to do? It's like, What do you mean? What? We're going to do what we did last year.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like even more last year, so.
I mean,
I'm not an ageist.
Yeah, I've been around for some time, so we know, like, this already happened so many times.
A few times. Yeah, exactly.
It will happen again.
Oh, 100%.
No, but I do want to, like, touch on that point, this idea that I feel like what the gaming space, you know, want to, like, try to put your finger on, I think what the gaming space is really encountering at this moment is that we had a system that worked, that's been taken away, but it hasn't gone fully. So it's like,
we're not completely out yet, so it's hard to find a new one.
Right, so if you guys have ever lived in another country, sometimes you're like, I'm here 1 year, 2 years, like, do I buy a car? Do I buy nice furniture? Like, I might move back. And so you're always like between two places.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the gaming space is. Everyone's sort of between these, you know, what iOS is basically doing with killing all the business, and Android. With the terrible CPMs and awful, you know, conversion rates and customer, you're sort of rocking a hard place, but they're also very different places.
I don't know.
Yeah. And let's see what happens next.
Yeah.
Crypto.
Yeah.
No.
AI. No, wait. Gus, we need to ask you because, you know, like a Cosmic Lounge, if you're playing, you know, buzzword bingo. Without like setting off my buzzword chart here. Yeah. What the fuck do you guys do?
Okay, so.
It's like the last word being like, oh, well, Cosmic Lounge.
We use ML, machine learning, and crypto to. Oh, no.
As someone who has been here long enough, I know the buzzword bingo, and I was in the AR localization Pokemon Go bingo. Yeah. I was in the VR bingo.
I was also in the VR bingo.
Social mobile local.
Oh, yeah, social games. Oh, boy. So,
hyper local?
Oh, God. I get a little bit sick in my stomach just thinking about buzzwords. So, and so, like, it should be a signal, the fact that I am in an AI game company. So first of all, it's a game company. It's not an AI product. We're not selling anything. We're not doing like AI. We're doing games.
Sounds like Web 2 in the house.
We're a game company. Okay. Come on. X Rovio. We are people, the average age in the company, like 10 years. So we've been around the block making puzzles.
Well, yeah, quite young.
We also have our 20-somethings.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot of cookie jars.
Well, we have been making puzzle games specifically, or casual games specifically, like for a while. So these are actual game makers.
And how do you leverage AI?
Exactly. So this was the thing. Imagine you're at a big company, like a King or whatever, and you're thinking, hey, I now want to really like dive deep into AI. If I feel like AI is like the new Photoshop for artists, right? It's like this new tool that doesn't actually create a genre, it doesn't actually make anything different, but it makes it faster. So it's a tool.
Yeah.
So it's like you're not reinventing the wheel, you're making the factory line that makes wheels.
So Cosmic Lounge is a gaming company that uses AI tools to build games quicker, more efficiently.
Yes.
Also themselves, or just helps the other?
It does not, we do not, we believe that this shit is so important, or it's going to make so much money that we want to keep it for ourselves, really. Okay. So,
we're not telling anyone.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. I mean,
So think about it like this. So you have a casual game. It takes, 9 months to make?
Yeah.
Something like this, sometimes more. But then you have hyper-casual games, and we talked about, 2 months, something like this. So now imagine you're making casual games at the speed of
4 weeks.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask a question. So hyper casual is like an up down game, right? Game goes up, and then you make another one, back game goes down, and it goes up. So
is there
a benefit, in your opinion, because that's the business here, of having 40 games in this, like, let's say you can roll this out and it goes faster and faster, and eventually, you know, you get a game that's almost instant. You know, it's like a couple of days, then compiles all the systems together, boom, you get a game. Mm-hmm.
So at first I was thinking, it's nice because, okay, you experiment more, you fail more, you learn more. But the more I've done some experiments in this area, the more I realize the kind of A/B tests that you can do, the kind of things that you learn. Because think about it, if you make games at that speed, at the speed of hyper-casual, hybrid-casual, but with a casual meta, with a casual monetization method, I'm talking like 70-30 for context here, you get the learnings from casual, but at the speed of a hybrid or a hyper-casual, you start to be able to test games against other games and ideas against other ideas, mini-games against other mini-games.
So this is what I'm trying to get at. You look at the top grossing charts for the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
How many new games have entered your chart, right?
Two?
Right? And how many of those games were launched in the year that they were not in a single one, right? So it's this massive long process, which isn't really about the game per se. It's about the growth in the community, the growth. So the question that I have here,
growth for the community, is growth for the company itself. So if you think as a company releasing multiple games, right? You're gonna fail, you're gonna miss, you're gonna not do so well. But you learn each and every time, right?
Sure. Hopefully.
What's the thing, like, what do you learn?
What do you learn? That's the thing.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, if you've got this track that you can just pump out as many games, and they don't like blue. Okay, we got to make it red, red or whatever. Alerting has been
The important part is not only to learn, but to get faster.
Yeah.
Each consecutive game needs to be released faster. Otherwise, you're doing something wrong. Just learning.
Yeah. How long does it take to release a game right now?
So that's the thing that I'm trying to say, is that we specialize in puzzle games, grid-based puzzle games. Okay. And there's a point to this. It's if you specialize in one niche, you are learning all the learnings that are reapplicable. So imagine I make a new feature. I make a reward odds placement. The next game can have the exact same reward odds placement, and suddenly I don't need to develop it again. Right?
Yeah.
So the developers, each incremental thing will be worth later, even if the game would fail, right?
Makes sense.
To answer your question about the speed at which we develop, I can't say too much right now, but I can say hybrid casual speed.
So three to 6 months. I'm saying that, aren't you?
Yeah,
I'm saying
that. I would say three months. Hybrid casual, so it depends. I think this word hybrid casual doesn't necessarily denote speed per se.
I think
it's about mechanics. If you go heavy on the graphics.
I was just saying it to see his reaction.
Why haven't we released yet is because there's a lot of fine tuning on all of this. Like, it's still new tech. AI is still new. Yeah. There's still a lot of hallucination and stuff that happens. It's not perfect. So it takes time to develop. And the other thing is, like, okay, so we talked about earlier today the fact that we can do a lot of mini games. So imagine we make a fake ad, we can actually put that in a game of ours as a mini game that actually exists in the game.
And a very quick turnaround.
It's hours. So that's why I'm like fucking excited. This is why I love this job, because it's like suddenly the fake ads that we both know.
So my Century Games releases a new fake ad. You can have it in the mini game within an hour or a couple hours.
I wake up, look at it, look at the chart.
Or you can just use reply and then you have it automatically.
That's crazy.
But this sounds to me like
if that works.
But then you have an issue, right? And this is why we're taking time and we're learning, we're experimenting a lot, is how do you fit all of them into one game, right? Like, you have examples like Lily's Gardens, Nightmares.
Yeah.
Right?
But
all over the place.
Yeah, I don't like that so much. So what we're now trying to investigate.
All the paint bubbles.
Is how do you fit it in a way that's logical, right? We do have the advantage if all the games are like grid-based puzzles, they all kind of feel
You can make it episodic or saga-based,
So that's what we're experimenting with.
So do I understand correctly? Because still sounds to me very cool for what Happy is doing. They have a template for role-based RPG. They can switch core gameplays around.
Did you not hear AI?
Wait a second.
AI.
They have the fucking same template, same monetization, same shop, same events, same everything. And just
we're not doing clapping? Okay.
So what's the difference between this thing?
Well, I think the biggest difference right now is genre. Like we're
that's the main problem. It's locked. You can only do that one.
But he's locked into the genre. He's locked.
But it's on purpose.
But when you're describing this framework, you're locked to the framework. So
yeah, you're locked. Role by action RPG.
But that's not what he's saying. He's saying that what they can do is they can look at the framework, and the framework is as malleable as the core loop. Right?
The technology does enable us to not need to necessarily release a new title, necessarily. Like, we might
do
that.
What
does
this mean?
It means that you could have a magic Candy Crush, but every level is something completely unique.
Yeah.
Built on top of itself moving forward. So,
we haven't proved if we should do
still
different games.
Grid-based game.
If you go with that route, yes.
Can we build an archer or out of it?
Yes.
So this is what we're trying to figure out. We don't have enough results.
Archer out of it, but at least like interfacing the same genre.
Yeah.
We are reading the puzzle genre, let's say.
Yeah.
Can we use the same template for a roguelite RPG game? Or a...
Why not us?
I mean, you have to train the model on whatever. You have to build it. You have to build the system.
That's the main problem with all these kind of
At least
templates
like,
that we feel bulk about. You're locking in one genre.
Sure, but... Okay, but you have to make sure you can add merch for it.
Or...
A different, not Blast, but...
Subgenre, but you're still winning the genre.
And merge, and Tap to Blast, and all these different genres. They're same for genre.
But still, yes.
But they're all puzzle and grid based.
But can we do, idle RPG out of it?
But that's not the point.
Probably not, no.
No, but the thing is, think about the model. You have to train the model, right? Just like you have in any bidding algorithm, right? So yeah, you want to buy for casino? Cool, you can do that. Can you do this also for non-casino games? Sure,
and
train a model.
The potential of just casual puzzle. Like, you don't need...
But I have to come back, but I
No, I'm just asking, like, what's the possibility? Because, like, of course, like, don't get me wrong, it's great.
But Adam was saying also, like, you start with match three, and then whatever is, like, tap to blast, and then you just switch all the...
And assets.
How do you feed the algorithm, though?
Still be in the one you want to get.
What do you mean by that?
How do you feed it? Like, which way
you want to... Which
state does it? Yeah,
you usually feed it with margaritas.
You feed the Gus with margaritas.
No, no,
no. So I got a question. Yeah. So, wait, that's about, because this is actually interesting to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Because obviously you're training it either on your own games or you're reverse engineering it in the case of other games to be like, look at this game, it's successful, give me this product. So have you guys heard of this company called Nightshade? You ever heard of this product?
That's a cool name,
fucking
though.
Cool. Nightshade? Cool. And if I tell you what it does, it's me even cooler. What it does...
Oh, come on.
Is
Cosmic Lounge is awesome.
What Nightshade does... is that when you upload a video, you have like, so you have your drawing, right? So what's the problem with AI? Is they use this open source, I mean not open source, they use the internet to train itself, right? Like, we have all these problems, right? So what Nightshade does is that when you upload an image, you first compile it with Nightshade. And what Nightshade does is it makes the visual of the image is looking like this, but when an AI reads it, it will corrupt the AI system. So if it uses it to train the model, so they say within 100 images, if 100 images come up with this system,
doesn't affect us.
It will collapse that. I don't know. I mean, it's more about just the idea of how do you regulate the usage of AI in this context.
So the
Nightshade.
How do we avoid Nightshade? No, that's actually a really simple answer. We don't develop the AI. We develop a tool, right? So Puzzle Engine, which is the tool that we develop in house, that is AIs are hot swappable.
Right.
So imagine now one AI is corrupted, Midjourney or whatever, and we want to switch to Leonardo, right?
Yeah.
We can.
Yeah.
Like, and it, for us, again, a few hours. And that's the point. It took us a while to develop the technology to be able to hot swap all these different AIs, but we are doing it because some of them are going to fail, and we know this, and we need to be ready for that.
But I think that's an important caveat. What he's describing, right, is that you have 15 different AIs trained on different types of
concepts. At a time, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, as a concept, I think, you know, your audience is more familiar with, like, a bidding algorithm, then they'll be super familiar with that concept that's related to AI and game development.
Yeah. A mediation of AIs.
An AI.
Well, technically, that's what we're doing in a way.
Yeah, but like, sounds completely logical to me. Like, it's, you know, like, flapping out those canisters, some of them burn out, like, you put a new canister in, like, the cannon is the important thing.
Imagine one AI suddenly has copyright issues.
Right. Yeah.
We can just immediately
pull it out.
Yeah. It's like, you know, pulling out your favorite friends from that
network.
Looking at you, Mintegral.
If I had to summarize it, it's we as game makers figured out it's good to specialize in a genre.
Yeah.
And now we're building all the tools to specialize faster, way faster. And then on the UA implications, for me, it's super exciting to be able to hot swap fake ads, and they're actually real mini games in a game.
I got to come back to this idea. Do you think this will be as successful as a Candy Crush without?
No, like, first.
So how do you get there? So Candy Crush is like same game, same everything, hyper focus on this one part.
Yeah.
What I've seen come, look at Slotomania, look at you know, Clash of Clans.
The genre masters.
Yeah, but these aren't genre masters. These are people who have singularly focused.
They were first on.
Okay, fine. Let's look at...
No.
Let me ask a question.
Here's my point. This is a company that took all its resources in one product and just lived that one product for 6 years until they got it right.
So does
the AI inhibit that? Or does our current, the way we're as built as gaming companies, it's like, so it's not working really well?
How do you compete with someone that made 15,000 levels? How do you compete with that? You need to make 15,000 levels.
You're
going to handmade make, as a startup, 15,000 levels. You're not, right? So maybe use AI to get that edge to be able to compete. So I'm not going to say that we have the tools to beat them overnight, but we have the tools to start competing with them with a smaller team.
I agree with the smallness of the team component, but when you've done 500 levels, you know what a good level looks like.
Yeah.
You have the genre expertise, basically.
Yeah. That is an important caveat, guys. levels of whatever level, you need data of those levels.
Yep.
You can make as many levels as possible. Well, if you don't have the data, throughput rates, the conversion rates of those levels are
win rates.
I don't know.
Yes.
Well, this is the kind of stuff I can't talk about.
See? Okay. Now we're getting serious.
I cannot talk about that, well, but let's say that
the AI is
we
get
are starting to investigate in that area.
Yeah, but you, it's like,
well, you have to. Like, that's
yeah.
the only
yeah, that's
way.
The thing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Everyone yeah. balances level, yeah. blah, blah, blah. And yeah. how would you insert
that's
AI?
That's the know-how. That's the know-how.
Well, I think you, no, so I can talk. No, but there's one KPI that you look at. It's called OCR, or the you know the rate of completion, right?
Yes.
And so there's
exactly.
there's a rate of completion which is beneficial for purchase.
Right? Exactly.
It's typically above 88 to 90%. So if you're now if you get too close, the person might not pay. If you get too far away, so if
of
you
course.
If you're
frustration
to how do you do it nowadays? You have a level designer that's checking the data and optimizing and refixing, redoing.
Doing
the
endless A/B tests.
So,
or you have dynamic tuning. So you're looking at so you have a baseline level, so the number of moves you have per level, then as you start to run it through, you get an average baseline of how many people are paying.
Yeah.
And losing. So when you lose this level, your completion rate is 40%. Okay, we need to add more moves. Or you need to reduce the number. So you have basically two levels, well three. You can PID controller, which is a color rating system. Use that to basically either define I have a number of moves, this is the ease of usage. Those are the key factors like it took me 6 minutes to complete this all. That's way too long. So you can manage all the
line
to this, but those were. If I'm thinking about that process, that's the hook for the end.
But I think that's the bread and butter of going into puzzle. You kind of have.
But an AI could make that easy. Like, I understand that an AI could get that done.
So you see, I'm not going to claim here that we're going to innovate the space in a way that the game is going to come out and it's going to be the most fresh take on puzzle, whatever.
Yeah.
At least not at first. But I can guarantee you that we'll get there faster. So that's kind of
does this help the industry or hurt it?
Ooh, now that's spicy because
Guess works there, so he's all right.
I'm not talking
about unfortunately, that is the answer. That is the
answer. Money, right? So you're
no, but that is the answer, unfortunately. I think it raises the bar of minimum
entry level.
Yeah.
So does it help or hurt the industry?
It filters it out.
It filters it out.
Yeah.
It kind of hurts it in some ways and helps it in others. So once you copycat faster, copycatting doesn't work anymore, so eventually you need to innovate again. So again, product becomes
you amplify the expertise.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I didn't think about it like that first.
That's really. Yeah.
But I like that idea. I like the idea that the copy, like, right now we
you
all.
Know what it does?
Well.
You know what it does? It means that no one can rest on their laurels anymore.
I like that. I like this idea.
So I say
it improves quality. Even if even if the quality is by saying, look, I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make something
always,
else. I gotta invent something else.
That's always what I hear even from like the really good graphics guy friend. Like everybody in graphics community is like scared about AI. My graphics friend was just like, give me all of it. Because I will be able to do the work of 20 people.
That's what happens to me as well. Like I said, look guys, there's Midjourney, Adobe, whatever tools AI they have,
give it to an artist.
It makes the process so much more efficient immediately.
It's so beautiful to give an AI to the right person and they go ham with it.
Yeah.
I like the idea, you hear this thing like AI is going to take your job. It's like, no, somebody who uses it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a great point.
You still need somebody that knows what they're doing. I have great artists and the AI made them.
And they're not
even
perfect.
Incredible. Oh my God,
As someone who's not into buzzwords, it's not perfect yet. You need someone to manually tweak out all the outputs.
It's not real AI. I really want to say something.
It's an assistant.
No, but it's not artificial intelligence.
Yeah,
it's a concept. It's a machine learning system, right?
Fair enough.
AI would grow and eventually take your job because it's your right, and then it would eventually become racist and kill.
Skynet
is what happens. Skynet. There's a reason that go Hollywood.
We don't have
the
real AI yet.
We have tools.
It replaces. So even as a professional in the games industry, the bar also raises, right? Because if you can just do mediocre jobs, an AI will kind of, not fully replace you, but in a way replace you.
But they do keep up, that's the thing. And with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Time to end. We have t-shirts for you guys. Thank you guys for coming on.
It's good. Amazing.
Thank you guys.
Excellent.
Good.
Thanks, guys. Perfect.
Don't forget to like and subscribe before AI replaces you.
Thank you.
Woo!
See you around.
Come to Barcelona.
Amazing.
Good conversation.